Mike Suri is on deck today to talk about The Lion King on episode 20 of Conversations with Creatives. The Lion King gave Mike his big break to becoming a supervising animator at Disney. But it wasn't an easy role to get. The door opened because the expectation for Lion King's success was very low, and all the heavy hitters were going on to Pocahontas. Fortunately for Mike, he worked hard to land the assignment at Timon, and the rest is history. The Lion King saved the studio, and it changed Mike's life.
So now, I didn't know what I was going to do next, and then all of a sudden, a week later, I get a call from Rob Minkoff saying, "Hey, how would you like to, we'd like you to be our supervisor of one of our characters on The Lion King?" And I go, "Oh, wow, I'd love to do that." "You know, which character?" "Well, we're thinking Tony was going to do Pumbaa, and you would do Timon." "Wow, yeah, that'd be great. Yeah, thank you, you know." So now I'm getting promoted again, and now, you know, it's more money. It's all the stuff that you know, okay, this is doing it. But even at that moment, it's still not 100% like they're believing in you, because then I'd find out, like, well, Nick was also going to be on that character. I go, so there's me and Nick animating on one character? Like, who's... So what they really, and I found this out a year later, after, like in production, Rob told me, goes that they put Nick on there because they wanted Nick. But Nick really wanted to go on to Pocahontas, because Pocahontas is where all the heavy hitters were. And Nick wanted to be associated with John Pomeroy, Glenn Keane, Eric Goldberg. He wanted to be on that, you know, he wanted to be in that photo, the Nine Old Men photo of that art.
Forget Lion King, let's go to Pocahontas.
Stupid movie. And he thought, "I want to work on a Warner Brothers type character." That's what he said. And I knew Nick very well. And I says, and the character he was going to do was John Candy as a turkey, talking John Candy. And he was doing tests. He was like, "I'm doing this." But they asked me to be a part of this, and so I'm kind of helping out on Lion King, but I really want to go to Pocahontas. I haven't told him what I want to do yet. So it's really up to Nick. So if Nick said, "I want to stay on Lion King," then I'm bumped. I'm not doing it. So then Nick eventually gets to the point where he's like, "Okay, I want to, Pocahontas is starting to ramp up and they need me, I'm going to go there." So then it wasn't 100% at that point, but just before that, Christmas came, Nick goes away back to Canada for Christmas. I say, "Okay, I'm going to do a test. This is where you do a test now." So I worked over Christmas and I did two tests of Timon, like with dialogue that I had, some scratch dialogue that they gave me. And I just worked on it, and tried to show them that I could do it. So after the holidays came back, I showed them the test. And Rob told me a year later that since that test sort of solidified that they believe, okay, we're going to be okay with Mike. We can let Nick go. We don't need Nick. We'll be okay with him. So Nick goes on, and then I stay on Lion King, and I'm like, "Oh, okay, good." And then we go to a meeting with Jeffrey, and Jeffrey's like meeting with all the directors, producers, head supervisors at the main lot at the outdoor commissary. Breakfast meeting, right? He's talking about animation, where it's going, what we're going to be doing. And he says, "Well, you got all these movies lined up. It's going to be great. You know, I'm really excited. I mean, we've got Lion King. I mean, that Lion King is, you know, and talking animals, you know, whatever. I mean, if it makes $100 million, you know, you'll have me on my knees, but whatever, you know." "But the movie is, it's going to make the studio go, it's Pocahontas. Now there's a movie. Now that's a movie, right?" And meanwhile, we're all like on Lion King, and going, "What? Like, he's making us, like, we're not like that big of a deal." But again, in Jeffrey's mind, like Nick, all the heavy hitters were on Pocahontas. Yeah. So it looked like it was a win-win. It's going to, nothing, how can that fail? It's got Glenn Keane, it's got John Pomeroy, it's got Eric Goldberg, Mike Gabriel.
Didn't the same thing happen in Disney's time with Dumbo, and there was, what was the other film? Dumbo was sort of looked down upon.
Oh, Bambi or Pinocchio?
Was it Pinocchio or was it Bambi? I don't know.
One of those two was, maybe
it was one that didn't do quite so well. And Dumbo was a real hit.
Yeah, Dumbo saved the studio from bankruptcy.
Yeah.
Because, and it may have been, what's my order? Is it Snow White, Pinocchio, Bambi?
Yeah, I think so.
It may have been Bambi, because Bambi was the art piece, you know? And they had talking animals, but they were going to be more, like, realistic, but...
And all the heavy hitters were on Bambi. And,
yeah. And then Ward and a couple other people were on Dumbo, and it was a shorter film, super cartoony, something that they've already kind of done. You know, Bambi was going to be more art, you know? Fantasia as well, right? It was around
right,
that time.
That's right. Or maybe so it was Fantasia.
Could have been, right? They would be like, oh, we're making art. We're pushing the boundaries of what... Yeah. Okay, Dumbo, cartoon characters, but save the company. And Charming movie. You know, made my
so
mother
you
cry.
Had your, own thing with...
Yeah, we had our own Dumbo.
Lion King. And
so, yeah. And so, there was no real expectations of it, right? So, perfect storm, be it that Disney put out Little Mermaid, right? Or Grey Mouse Detective got people going, oh, that was kind of fun. Little Mermaid comes out. Wow, musical animation, like musical theater. Theater at that time was huge, like Broadway, everything very popular. So now kids and adults can see it on the theater but in animated form, and it was kind of a nice escape, right? It had everything that you walked up feeling really satisfied. So they did when they did Mermaid, and then Beauty and the Beast comes out, huge success, you know, Oscar nomination. The studio was making money with that. Aladdin comes out. You have Robin Williams. Again, musical comedy, funny, charming, all those things that you'd want in a movie. So the studio was just booming, right? And that, at that point is when they said, we're going to make two movies now, Pocahontas and Lion King at the same time, which they hadn't done before. And that is where they needed more time. So the benefit was, it's like anything. You show me, you know, you put out a hit song, and then next year you put out another hit song, and then the next year I'm going to be like, where's your hit song? Well, I'm working on it. You're going to be like, oh, God, I can't wait for Todd's next song. And so the anticipation leading up to that is can work in your favor. And with Lion King, it was that, because as we started to... People were expecting, because they were getting a movie every year. They had Mermaid. They had that bit of a Rescuers Down Under, but then they had Beauty and the Beast. Okay, that was great. Oh, Aladdin. Oh, that was great. What's next? No, nothing yet? Oh, what's... Well, we've got Lion King, and we've got this Pocahontas. Oh, what is that? Well, it's going to be another year. Oh. So then when Don Hahn, smart enough, put out the first act, or that opening sequence, as a teaser, with the moon, with all the animals...
Yeah.
When people saw that, they were like, oh. No dialogue, nothing. You just got generic animals reacting to your new king being born.
Right?
And music and everything was just the perfect timing. That it just got people totally immersed into it. But still, the studio's thinking Pocahontas is the movie, right? So we move forward, keep going, keep working on the film. Little things along the way that I remember thinking is like, they were trying to think, well, how do we... Around the time, I think young Simba kills his father, or accidentally kills his father. They thought, well, how do we show that? How do we do that? And there was a lot of talk about, do we want to show that one of the main characters on screen dead? And they said, well, I think we have to do that. And then they figured a way, like you see in the movie, to show it and do it in a way that is, you know, it made, later I heard from Howard Green, head of publicity stuff for Disney, and would get letters constantly from mothers when the movie was in the theater that saying, how dare you put that movie, I dropped my kids off at the theater and they came into the car after watching your movie and were asking me what happens when you die. But that's not a bad thing. It's better to have your kids responding to something than just going, okay, it's over. Right, where's mom? Right. Let's go home.
Right.
So there was, like, in the making part of it was that we had a tight schedule like Disney does, and we're trying to slug through it, but there's also that, you know, what's this movie shaping up to be? Because it started to really just started to have all the pieces that were just perfect for it. I mean, look, tone, music, everything was just... And Pocahontas was still working its way through, trying to be like what it was, which is trying to be very artistic, slightly more realistic. I mean, I remember working on it. We have scenes in Irony B that I'm working on Timon, which is the closest to a Warner Brothers character that I'd ever worked on at a Disney studio. And Nick, and that's exactly what Nick wanted, but he walked away from it. And he ended up getting a mute raccoon.
The raccoon, yes.
Somebody. He'd come over and go, oh. So what's your character saying today, Nick? Is it, you know, doing other mime things to him. Meanwhile, my character is like, hey, hey, boom, blah, 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 blah. Keeps talking and talking. So it was kind of interesting to watch how they were trying to, what they would still consider making like major art versus what we were doing. But as it started to piece together, it started to look better and better now. During the making of it, just on like the micro working part of it, was that I was there was times when they give you work to do, and they, as a supervisor, they say, okay, here's all the scenes that are coming down the pipe, and I would go, okay, I'll give those to Brian, I'll give these to Mike, I'll give these to John, I'll give these to whoever. And there was one scene that I wanted to do, but they said, well, you can't do it because you have too much on your plate, so there's no way you can do that. Which was the him coming in, saying, lion sleeps like a wean bowit. Where they come over the hill.
Right.
And he says, you can't do it, it's too long, you won't be able to do it. And I says, no, I think I can do it. And I knew enough by then that if you sort of piss on the scene, then nobody's going to take it from you. So if you dive in and just go, see, I did it, I'm doing it. And they went, okay, we can't take that now. So I roughed out this long scene in like a day or two and showed it like in 4 days. I showed it, a rough pass. And they, so once you show that and the directors are giving you notes, then it's sort of like, now you
got it. Yeah.
So now I can just go, okay, good, I got it. But now they want me to get it done.
Yeah.
And that scene became like a bit of a joke because it was like, I could, because it's a cappella, right? There's just them singing and it's long. And back then we would shoot stuff on a 3/4 tape.
Oh my gosh, really?
Remember yes, the back, yes, the 3/4? Yes. So you would have to like put your tape in, put a piece of paper down, and you would click and it would kind of roll back and roll up and record. And then you take it off, put a new one down. And then you go, and you'd have to program ahead, shoot on twos, okay? So, and you would do that, right? But the tape, because the scene was long, and you would have a cassette of the thing, and you'd have to put the cassette in, and on the thing, you would hear the beep, you know, beep, beep, beep. And then when you'd hear that beep, you'd have to click, you know, to record the sound to put it where it needs to be. And I would do it, and I'm like, okay, all right, I think that's, but it's rough. It's like on eights and 12s, so it seemed like it was working. But as I start to finesse and get in there, it keeps seeing, like, is that out of sync? Like, is that not, let me watch it again. Is that, okay, I think it's, because there's no beats, there's no, like, sound of a bass drum, or it's just a whim, like, so if you don't know music, and I don't, It's hard to know exactly like where you should be doing stuff if you don't know the tempo. So I'm now dealing with Roger, who knows music, Rob, who knows music, and Don Holland, who knows music. So at one point I'm showing the scene and it's just not in sync. And the reason why is because the tape starts to stretch.
Oh no.
So it just, no matter what, and we didn't realize it, because they would always go, Rob goes, it's out of sync. I go, it is? He goes, yeah. See, okay, that person's syncing, then, okay, now it's out of sync here. Like, that's, like, you should be hitting it here, and you're hitting it here. And I'm like, and you know, like anything, you hear something, after a while, you can't
process it.
No, anymore. And I can't hear anything but what I hear, so I don't hear what you hear. I can't erase what I'm hearing. So the funny thing was, it got to a point where I showed the scene to Rob. Rob then calls in Roger. Roger and Rob are looking at it going, no, is that in sync? Because shouldn't it be like, Wimbleway, right? Yeah. And then Robert was going, yeah. And then they couldn't figure out. Then Don comes, so they got, I've got all three of them looking at it going, well, what if it's So right there, he should be like, his foot should be on the ground here. Meanwhile, then we found out the reason why is because the tape was stretching. So then the only way to do it was to get it into editorial and then find out exactly where.
It took
me 8 weeks.
Oh my gosh.
So something that I said, I can get it done this week. It took me 8 weeks to get done. But
that's funny.
Yeah. That was a memorable joke later
good,
in the
good
movie.
Good old three-quarter tape.
It was like, Mike doesn't know music. Remember, Mike, you couldn't hit the beat? Okay. Yes, I remember. Yeah, sorry. And then, then we had the earthquake, Northridge quake.
Yeah, I remember that.
I came in on Lion King, and I didn't know enough to know like major earthquake. Like, I mean, I'd had many before, but this was a huge one.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, we go to work, right? So I show up at work, there's nobody there. I went, I better see if anything got broken or fell over. And the only thing that fell was my maquette of Timon. He has a grub on his hand, and you can remove the grub. And the grub had fallen on the ground. I went, oh, okay, that was it.
Wow.
That was my only tragedy. Yeah. And then that led to, eventually we get the movie done, it comes out. And I remember that weekend, because again, it's my first time supervising, so you're more privy to information because they're going to share it to you because you're a supervisor, you're in leadership. So I was just getting all this information. I got a call Saturday morning, I guess it would have been that weekend, saying, oh, they project Lion King is going to make, I can't remember what it was at the time, something like 60 million? I don't know what it was. Something huge, like blowing away Aladdin and Beauty and the Beast. Like, it was just going to be massive. And then they predicted it was going to make 150 million in 3 weeks. And so it makes 100 million. We have a party, which is what we've done in the past. So the party, Jeffrey comes out, and they had lions. So to roll back, we had drawing class at the beginning of the movie with lion cubs, real lion cubs that this guy brought in. And now at the end of the movie, you walk into this party, and they have now full-grown male lions. Well, it's the same lion.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. It was like crazy. Like, oh, it's the same lion that we were drawing as a cub. It's now... it's crazy. So then Jeffrey came in and he's like, congratulate everybody. And he did. He got on his knees in front of everybody. He went like that. So I said I'd do it. So here I am. I'm on my knees. And then the movie, as you know, just went on to become like unbelievable. I mean, it's a life changer. It's a life changing moment. Mm-hmm. Definitely a life changing moment because from career, from an artistic level, and from a monetary level, it was just. I can buy a house now. I can plan for a future.
Right.
And it was fascinating just to be a part of something that was so big. Right. It was a little bit of a blur because I was so new to it.
Yeah.
doing press for it, did the European press junket, and being at a party with Roy Disney and not really putting it together like that's Roy Disney. And, and he's like, hey, Mike. You're like, hey, like not processing exactly to what level what part of history that you're witnessing, and I guess that's like anything. And when you get the chance to look back at it, you kind of really process what it is that you were a part of.
That's cool.
Yeah, it was, and then, the shrapnel of the movie, the theater, theatrical, the Broadway show, getting to see that, be a part of that as far as getting to see backstage how they did that stuff, meet the guy who was playing Timon. So it was just like a lot of cool moments connected to that movie that went on for quite a while. Got a lot of free lunches from it. From, draw Timon or go to lunch with Tony and you draw Puma, draw Timon and you say, oh, we'll pay for it. Oh, okay.
In the next episode, Mike talks about his days in Paris working on Hunchback, the departure of Jeffrey Katzenberg, and why he, Mike, left Disney to work in story at DreamWorks, where he is today. And looking ahead, maritime painter John Stobart will be with us in a few weeks. Thank you for joining us on this edition of the Schaefer Creative Podcast. You'll find the show notes and more information about Schaefer Creative at schaefercreative.studio. Consider supporting this podcast at our Patreon page, and please share us on social media. Music is by Lee Rosevere.